Our thanks to Gwen Seller from the Wirral for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. We'll welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and John Robbins. Francis, who's made a strong and stable statement?
Well, it's Theresa May's manifesto. It's what, in other elections, we would call the Conservative manifesto, but for some reason, the title of the Conservative Party seems to have been shut in a cupboard for the duration of this campaign, and they're now called Theresa May's team. I mean, they never used the word Conservative at all, so I think this was just, it said, a manifesto from Theresa May and her team, whoever they may be. Have you seen her when she sent out letters, mass mailings to people, with just a picture of herself, and it said, Theresa May, Prime Minister, at the top? And then, dear elector, you may have noticed there's an election, you are allowed to vote for me. and she's... And I saw Norman Smith, the BBC political person, after the launch, saying she's now gone peak May, which I think means she's gone peak Cruella de Vil, because... Because, you know, since she became Prime Minister, we've had a lot of this talk of, you know, stop the saboteurs and death to the enemies of the people and all this sort of stuff. And she's now turned on the enemies of the people, who turn out to be small children and pensioners. And she's going to take away little children's school dinners, I think, and force them to eat breakfast instead in primary schools, which I wouldn't mind, personally. I'm quite keen on breakfast, a decent fry-up, but you just know it's not going to be much for breakfast. It's going to be bowls of thin gruel, and you'll have to queue up to be given your bowl of gruel. And the pensioners, she's ending the triple lock. It's only going to be a double lock on their pensions, and she's going to means test their winter fuel allowance, and she's going to make loads of them pay more for social care, I think, particularly non-residential people who aren't in care homes but are having care at home. They're going to be stumping up quite a lot more, I think, until they're so broke they actually have to sell their house anyway, and then they are genuinely non-residential because they have no residence. So she's achieved her aim.
What do you think, Angela?
I think you've got to admire the Tory party's sort of cockiness in bringing out a manifesto that absolutely targets their core group of voters. It's like One Direction releasing an album called Teenage Girls Are Fat and Stupid. I mean, some of her politics, you know, wants to get rid of winter fuel allowance. The future's looking bleak, you know. We're all living longer. We've got to worry about these. There's so many 100-year-olds in this country now. The Queen's had to get a Moonpig account to keep up, right? We should be worrying about this stuff. And I think by the time I get to old age, it's not going to be any social care provision. It's going to be what they'll be when I get there. It'll be OAP rescue centres. That's what it'll be. It'll work like Battersea Dogs Home. You know, like this idealistic young couple will come in and they'll get shown around, you know. This is Mabel. She likes crosswords, knitting and casual racism. Why don't you take her?
How do you feel about it all, Kiri?
Oh, I'm scared. Because my parents, they love Theresa May. They care about her deeply and say things like, oh, it's like the daughter we never had.
There's apparently a group of young people now called Maylennials. But Maylennials are young people who don't associate Tories. They have no memory of Thatcher. They have no sort of association of the era in the 90s where they all wore baseball caps and were sort of super dweeby. And they just think, yeah, she's all right, she'll get me a bit more money. And they've got a sort of oi oi mentality.
So, but it's odd because at the same time as doing all this Cruella stuff, she's saying that she's leftier than thou. And so every time Corbyn says, we're going to nationalise the railways, she says, well, I'm going to be bringing in a record number of workers' rights, just you wait and see. And she's saying a lot of strange things you expect Labour to say. They were going to cap gas prices, try to out Corbyn. And the outcome of this election between two parties both saying, no, we're going to do even leftier things, is that we'll end up with a very right-wing government, which is quite surprising. But there we are. That's how it works. The very same breath as she was saying, the Labour Party will take us back to the 70s, just after saying we're going to bring back grammar schools and fox hunting. So I think
on what planet is that the priority, to bring back a blood sport? She said that her reasoning was that other forms of controlling foxes can be quite cruel. And it is true. There is a cruelty about a bullet to the head that you just avoid by tearing an animal in half with wild dogs. because that's the preferred method for anyone seeking euthanasios. Don't make it quick, make it long and on a lawn.
Yeah. I want to have to jump at least 7 fences.
Yeah.
There must be bugles. Admittedly, this is the tale of St. Teresa, patron saint of quality trousers and the cold, hard stare, who this week announced her manifesto for the next 5 years. And she ascended the mountain and spoke to the multitude, saying, "Under my government, the meek will inherit the earth." Well, not the whole earth, but certainly that tiny bit of the earth, which will be all that's left once we've deducted the cost of looking after the meek's parents. And the Conservative manifesto was launched under the slogan, "Strong, stable government in the national interest." Although a more honest slogan would probably be, "I hope this is what you like, because this is what you're definitely getting." The Conservatives plan to fund social care by reclaiming the costs from people's estates, described by some critics as a death tax. I'm planning to dodge this when my time comes by going to Dignitas, which I'm fairly sure counts as dying offshore. Additionally, free school lunches will be replaced by free school breakfasts. Pupils will be given the choice between a hard breakfast of toast and muesli... or a soft breakfast of rich, nourishing gruel, followed by playtime or freedom of movement. To Wales. To Francis. Angela, who's released a big red book?
OK, so this is the official launch of the Labour manifesto. I say official launch because obviously it got leaked last week. So when Jeremy Corbyn released it this week, we had to pretend we hadn't already seen it. You know, like getting a Christmas present that you'd already found in your other half's pant drawer. And his manifesto, he's called it "For the Many, Not the Few," which is, I think, almost a quote from Star Trek to Wrath of Khan. Now, I didn't read it all. I didn't read the whole manifesto because I'm under a lot of pressure at the moment with box sets I've got to catch up on. And it's really long. I think I got the gist of it is reprivatise rail, reprivatise water, scrap tuition fees, bring back Bake Off and take back Hong Kong, I think. Now, Theresa May called it a fantasy wish list. It's a question that needs answering. How's it going to be paid for? I do understand that. I just have a brain. I've really tried to get my head around economics. I'm 40 now, and I've just got... Do you know what? I'm never going to get it. In the same way that I'm never going to be able to tell if a poem is good or not, right? I'm just... just not gonna, I know that they need to fund... They need £48 billion, right, is the spending that the Labour manifesto... Plus 20 quid, so Jeremy Corbyn could get a new suit for polling day. I understand they're going to target high earners, and that makes sense, except, you know, high earners, a little bit of a history of avoiding the tax. So is it going to be the middle classes that are hit most? So that we keep getting told that the middle classes are dying out. You know, I hear that apparently in Croydon now there's only 6 breeding pairs left. So the problem is the manifesto's good, it's just the problem is Jeremy Corbyn, isn't it? Now, I like Jeremy Corbyn as a man, but he doesn't connect with voters everywhere. I know that lots of swathes of the North don't connect with Jeremy Corbyn because he's just a man from North London. You know, he thinks he connects with those people because he's seen I, Daniel Blake 3 times, and by the 3rd time, he didn't even need the subtitles. So, basically, the manifesto is like a new Cliff Richard album, right, in that the fans really like it, but no-one's buying it.
I got to the bit about hospital car parks, which was very exciting. As I spend most of my life in hospital car parks for one reason or another. And so that's a big breakthrough for me. Although, actually, I do get free parking at hospitals anyway, as a frequent flyer, as it were.
It sounds like you go dogging.
Yeah, a lot of that goes on in the Chelmsford area, I can assure you. Well, actually, yes, our hospital is currently out of action anyway, I think, because the North Koreans have sabotaged it. But, it was all right, the manifesto, except we'd read it all already. I'm sure that it was leaked by sources close to the leadership. I mean, the time it leaked, they were saying this is a appalling Blairite plot. But I think it was much more in their interests to leak it themselves, because then they would say, we don't comment on leaked documents, so they couldn't really be questioned about it, because it's a leak, so we don't have to answer any questions. So they had a week to let it permeate before they then had to answer questions. But then it's very odd. I mean, you can see why it doesn't go down terribly well in certain parts of the country, because Emily Thornberry is Islington South, Jeremy Corbyn is Islington North, Diane Abbott is Hackney North, I think, or somewhere. I mean, they are all within about a square mile of one another, the Labour front bench. It is a fairly limited sort of routine, and if only they were better at putting their case across, perhaps it wouldn't matter. But as it is, it's too cruel. It's like blood sport. You can't watch it.
Who else has released a manifesto? Any others?
Oh, there's loads. Everyone's chucking them out now. The Green Party have come out with a manifesto. Had a good read of that. I like it. It's really optimistic. They've clearly not costed anything. Like, there's no numbers really mentioned. I think they're hoping that every time they pay with something for a tenner, the cashier thinks it's a 20 and gives them another tenner back. The SNP have released one, and they've got upset because they said that Labour and the Lib Dems, they're copying us. I hate that, all that, you know, they're copying me, miss, you're copying me. I hated that in school. My primary school was a private school, and when that happened, they go, miss, they're copying me. The teacher would go, don't tell tales. And then my secondary school was a state school, and when they went, miss, they were copying me, they would say, snitches get stitches. So... They said they want to invest in transport in the north of England as well, the SNP. They want to create a link between the north of England and Scotland so basically they can improve the transit of goods and stag doos and football hooligans between the two areas.
It's just a cool way of saying widen the A1, isn't it?
The Lib Dems as well, their big thing is that they want to legalise cannabis. They think it's going to create like £1 billion worth of revenue. And more people are going to be able to do fractions, eighths and quarters specifically. Plaid as well, Plaid Cymru have, for what it's worth, have released one. They've basically said that they still want tariff-free access to the EU. It's not going to happen, is it? Like, they've not got a particularly strong bargaining position. Like, no one in Europe needs rugby players or love spoons that desperately.
And also, they charge an entry fee themselves, don't they, of £6.70 every time you have to go. John, are you across all the manifestos?
Well, I just wondered, seeing as this is the BBC, is this the bit where we now talk about UKIP for half an hour in spite of them having no MPs? Wouldn't it be nice just for once for either the Tories or Labour to look at the other one's manifesto and go, do you know what, that's a bloody good idea. What? Let's just do that. Yeah, let's all do that. That's definitely good for everyone. Surely they should just go, yeah, actually, legalising cannabis is quite a good idea. It'll save a lot of police time.
Do you think that'll be the policy that unites all parties? Francis, have you any favourite policies that have been leapt out of any manifestos at you this week?
Only hospital parking. I don't care about anything else.
Languidly, this is the official launch of the Labour manifesto, where they promise to abolish tuition fees and zero-hours contracts, nationalise the trains, the mail, the water and the energy companies, while bringing back a 50p tax rate. If Labour got into power and do all of these things, they would truly have built a new Jerusalem, which is surprising, given that several of them have such a problem with the existing one. Labour want to take water, gas and electricity into public ownership, although they have now realised that due to safety concerns, Diane Abbott won't be able to deliver all of them in the same van. The Liberal Democrats pledged a rent-to-own scheme in which tenants could keep paying monthly to live in their home until they finally own it after 30 years. What a fantastic idea. I'm surprised that no banks, say, or building societies have thought of that one before. Plaid Cymru manifesto pledged to protect Wales from a tidal wave, although in practice the brunt of the force would be taken by Ireland anyway. By the time it reached Aberystwyth, it would be less a tsunami, more an undulating mass of brine, flotsam and charming twinkly-eyed corpses. Picture all the interior decor of an O'Neill's, but with the atmosphere of a Wetherspoons. The SNP have accused Labour of stealing their ideas, evidence of which was seen at the launch event in Bradford, where Jeremy Corbyn turned up in a pastel skirt and declared, "You may think I'm a timid wee lassie, but I'm no fear of anyone." 2 points to Angela. John, who claims he's facing trumped-up charges?
It's our old friend, the leader of the free world and a man who provides so much material for topical BBC panel shows. It's been a slow week for Donald Trump. He's only committed 2 potentially impeachable acts. In a saga that sounds so much like The West Wing, you need to begin any description of it by saying, "Previously on Trump." He has fired a man for investigating a man into links with the Russians, who was then fired for his links to the Russians before leaking information to the Russians. So, Donald Trump fired James Comey, director of the FBI. He told Comey to watch his back on Twitter because Trump is a teenage girl slash drunk adult. And he said that there may be tapes. You better hope there's not tapes of our conversations. He used inverted commas on tapes, which shows that he doesn't understand what inverted commas are, because he meant tapes.
Did you see his tweets? He said, "No American president has suffered as much as I have, apart from the ones who've been assassinated, presumably." And then he said, "I'm the victim of the biggest witch hunt in US history."
Which is
people in Salem, Massachusetts, might have something to say about that. Because actually, Comey is also going to testify. Is it next week? I think next Wednesday. He said he wouldn't go and do it in a closed session. He wanted to do it in public. He'd only come if it could be televised. Which is just like the summer of 73. I spent the entire summer watching the televised Watergate hearings. Dripping stuff.
It's great.
And John Dean, who was one of Nixon's people in the White House who went to jail, he's still alive and he's very compos mentis and he's tweeting constantly about it. He keeps saying, "I remember that bit when the special counsel gets appointed. Oh, yes, when you sack the head of the FBI, I know what happens next."
Gorgeously, this is the Trump presidency, which some are predicting is about to hit the buffers, surprising those of us who thought it had passed the buffers some time ago. Plowed through the station and was now careering down the high street, while a man with an unlikely haircut stands in the driver's cabin shouting, "Poop, poop, onwards to Moscow!" Trump has been accused of obstruction of justice after allegedly telling then-FBI head James Comey that he would like him to drop the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Senior Republicans say that it's important not to rush to judgment on the whole affair, at least not until everyone involved has had the opportunity to come up with some really watertight lies. Also this week, it emerged that the president had discussed classified information with Russian Ambassador Sergei Lavrov. And with the president now directly handing state secrets to the Russians, one has to feel sorry for actual Russian spies who have nothing left to do but sit on Washington Park benches feeding the ducks and doing the occasional wistful covert exchange of identical empty briefcases. Just to keep their hands in. By the way, if you're looking forward to getting rid of Trump, remember, Mike Pence will be taking over, and if you don't know who he is, then I suggest that you Google him. You may want to have a hanky ready and not in the good, usual way. 2 points. John. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Angela have 4 and Kiri and John have 5. We start round two with an extract from an article in The Telegraph.
The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are to seek damages after topless images of the Duchess appeared in Closer magazine alongside an article about the pair.
Thanks to William Walker for sending us that. Kiri, who is the Flying Dutchman?
So this is King Willem Alexander of the Netherlands, and he has been flying on KLM Airlines for 21 years, because he said he wanted a hobby that challenged him. Do Sudoku, no one has to die. But he's not really a pilot, he's a co-pilot, which we all know is not a thing. If the pilot dies, everyone dies. If the co-pilot dies, it's a plane with a dead man on it. No films about co-pilots, are there? Co-pilot is the only job that's less essential than the King of the Netherlands. But yeah, that's it. He's just been flying around, this king in the sky. I like it.
And apparently, I've got a Dutch friend, and she said that apparently he's a bit of a figure of fun. Like, when he was a prince, they used to call him Prince Pills because he always had a beer in his hand. And I was like, I don't want that man flying my plane.
Is there the King of Netherlands someone that you know, Francis? He's like, the sort of person who bumped into
it. The weird thing about it was he said he'd got away with it for 21 years without anyone suspecting, because he's a co-pilot, so they don't... He doesn't get named at the start of the flight because he does the announcements. Quite surprising that after 21 years, there's nobody still recognising his voice. I mean, I think if I got on British Airways and this voice came saying, "My pilot and I..." might just about guess that something was afoot. But apparently he's so anonymous, this poor little dumpling, that no
I
one
thought
met,
it was
no
Orville. I've just realised who it was.
Morbidly, this is the news that the King of Holland has in his spare time, and one struggles to imagine what other kind of time he has. Been flying planes for the Dutch airline KLM for over 2 decades. It's nice that the King has finally gone public. Up until now, it was a secret that he'd giggle over with our own dear Queen Elizabeth II once she was back from one of her overnight haulage shifts with Eddie Stobart. King Willem said that he often goes unrecognised in Schiphol Airport whilst wearing his uniform, although, to be honest, I'd be hard-pushed to recognise the King of Holland in a lineup of 2 people. Even if one of them were wearing a T-shirt that said, King of Holland. And the other person had a T-shirt saying, I'm with the King of Holland. He's not the first royal to secretly work in the transport industry. Queen Victoria was legendary for her taxi driving, and Prince Andrew famously spent 1995 as a bollard. Two points to Kiri. John, have a listen to this.
Terrifying reworking of Midge's classic.
John, who got bored in Austria this week?
This is news that Britain's ambassador to Austria got charged by a wild boar whilst walking in the woods near Vienna. And the most remarkable thing about this story is it is not from the 17th century. He was out walking in the woods. Oh, what a life. To be an ambassador, to just walk in the woods. He was charged by a wild boar. My suspicion is he was entertaining David Cameron, and David Cameron persuaded him to go out on the pull. He described coming across 4 or 5 hulking adult boars and countless piglets. One of them attacked him, and he escaped up some... He climbed up a tree... I mean, I don't know. Miles, you must have encountered the odd angry boar on the estate.
I've encountered the odd angry boar on the news quiz.
No. How does one deal with a boar on the land?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got a fairly standard sized garden.
Which 60 or 70 acres?
I don't know. I mean, I'm fairly short sighted. I can't see what it is that I can hear running around out there.
There was a hunting website as well that said that boars are more dangerous than bears, which sounds like a typo. It's definitely not right. Definitely not right, because I know what boar tastes like. They taste like expensive sausages at a country fair.
They got tusks, though, don't they? Mm. That would scare me, the tusks.
You eat round them.
Do you?
I didn't even know it happened. I don't know much about the Austrian countryside, but I think a rampaging wild boar would have certainly cheered up the opening hour of The Sound of Music.
Pigs can be quite aggressive, just normal domestic pigs. Because we used to have we kept a stray pig for about 10 years, who arrived as a little piglet. And she was just found running up the lane, this tiny piglet, and no one locally knew where she'd come from, and so I think she had fallen off the back of a lorry, literally, of other piglets. So we had to take her in, and then she got huge, and we had to fence off most of the garden and turn it into a pig paradise for her. And there was an apple tree within the pig paradise, and she used to just lie in the summer underneath it with her mouth open and to catch apples in her mouth.
You kept
sort of doing the work of the sous chef.
Exactly. Well, I think. Well, the odd thing is, because in her later years she got quite arthritic, and. We said to the vet once on one of his visits, well, how long do pigs live? And he said, I don't know, not many of them die of old age, to be honest.
Gosh, what an extraordinary evening. Obstreperously, this is the extraordinary story of the British ambassador to Austria who survived an attack by a wild boar in the woods near Vienna, suffering only cuts and bruises. This may seem embarrassing, but it's actually our most successful attempt to forge new trade links since Brexit. Nobody's quite sure what initially attracted the boar to the ambassador, whose nickname is Old Truffle Pockets. Of course, we have to remember that all of this is just one man's alibi for having come back from the wood with torn trousers and muddy knees. 2 points to John. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes, James Tyrrell spotted this as a rather crucial missing comma on the BBC Breakfast Facebook page. Back in work this morning or worried about your computer at home following the ransomware cyber attacks? Here are some tips on how to protect your computer system from our technology reporter, Chris Fox.
John.
Mark Ponsford has spotted a tweet from Cumtaf University Health Board. This week is Obesity Awareness Week. Why not give it a go?
Thank you. Now let's take a look at the final scores. Kiri and John have 9, but this week's winners are Francis and Angela with 10. Before we leave you, here is an announcement from a trade magazine sent in by Andrew Park.
Last year, the multinational firm Osborne Clark introduced a system of agile working called Sit Anywhere, Work Anywhere. The scheme is exclusively available in its Reading office.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Angela Barnes, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and John Robbins. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was written by Nick Doody, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Ben Hillier, David Mays and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.
Comedy continues on Radio 4 Extra. In half an hour, Richard Briers stars as the newly qualified Dr. Simon Sparrowhawk, who's finding that being a ship's doctor is far from plain sailing. Doctor at Large, first broadcast in 1969, is at 7:30. Here on Radio 4, a row at the Cannes Film Festival about two Netflix movies that are competing for the Palme d'Or this year. Details on Front Row at 7:15. And later at 8 o'clock, Jonathan Dimbleby chairs Any Questions from West Horsley in Surrey. I wonder if they'll be talking about the general election.
46 million voters, 50,000 polling stations,
20,000 leagues under the sea,
650 constituencies, 428 different parties,
5,000 metre steeplechase,
£31 million on campaigns, 42 days of campaigning,
8 lords are leaping.
You're not taking this seriously, are you?
No.
7 main parties,
5 steps to a perfect tummy,
1 general election,
3 vote now shows.
That's better.
Yes.
The Vote Now Show, each Sunday evening until the election at 7:15, and then available on the BBC Radio 4 website.